beware and prepare for something spine tingling, something horrifying, pure terror to your eardrums. This is Epic Film Guy's B-Sides.
Welcome, ghouls, ghosts, maniacs, all you slashers out there, and maybe a few predators? I would hope we don't have any predators listening to the show, but welcome to another episode of Epic Film Guy's B-Sides. It's been quite a while, but the season is almost upon us for all things horror, and that means you'll be getting more B-Sides cut into your listening schedule starting in October. I am, of course, your host, Epic Film Guy Justin.
And I'm Epic Film Guy Brian.
Epic Film Guy Brian nothing. He is the self-proclaimed god of podcasting, Loy Sauce, Loy Sox himself. Don't let him fool you. Don't be so humble, Brian. We know that you know who you are on this show. And with the release of The Predator closing in on us as of this recording, we decided to tackle one of the most iconic yet divisive franchises within the fan community. That's right, The Predator series. Yeah, I know what you're going to say. I know what you're thinking. Are these dudes really going to talk about those dumpster fire Alien versus Predator movies? No safe word needed here. You guys are safe from those travesties for now. Tonight, we'll be focusing in on the main three Predator films, starting with John McTiernan's iconic, yes, Nick, I know you're editing this right now, iconic 1987 classic. I repeat, classic. For those of our listeners out there, when we get to the movie, you'll know why I'm doing this. Classic film. But first, Saucy, Loy Sauce, the self-proclaimed god of podcasting, I had to ask you, how you doing, man? What have you been up to? What's new in the life of the sauce?
Very well, Justin. Thank you for asking. I just finished putting up on sale all of the October releases for the Alamo Drafthouse.
Ooh, spooky.
Cinema. So yeah, in Ashburn, Virginia. So we're getting into spooky movie season, and I couldn't be more excited. I just picked up Hereditary on 4K Ultra HD, and I'm getting all in the horror mode.
And I myself just received a CD. Yes, I still buy them. That's still a thing.
Compact disc?
A compact disc. Yes, I know that Best Buy stopped selling them, and you can only find them online for the most part. But I bought Douglas Pipe's Trick or Treat original motion picture score, because nice. I just had to have it. And it's one of my favorite movies. And yes, Scream Factory has that brand new 2K version coming out with Michael Dougherty involved within the next few weeks, just in time for Halloween. So I'm excited. I'm in full mode. And I know we don't do What Are You Drinking on the show. And I know that you're dry tonight. For like the third time being on the show in the past month, you're not drinking again. So, and I know you're not sober because you've gotten wasted here at my place a number of times in that time span, but I'm drinking the Schlafly, yes, I think I'm saying that correctly, Schlafly Pumpkin Ale. Another thing to piss off Nick as he edits this episode. Please don't edit that out, Nick. Please don't. But yes, I'm in full mode. I just showed you as we were starting this recording, I got blueberry cereal. I mean, I ate a pumpkin donut yesterday. I'm in full October mode. But all that aside, we have The Predator landing in theaters next week, actually. And a lot of fans are kind of like iffy on it. They're on one side or the other. You and I are pretty much on the same page. We just want to have a fun time with it. And we're going to talk about why that is after we talk about all three of these movies. But there's a possibility, Brian, that someone listening to this show may not have ever seen any of them, especially the 1987 classic starring Arnold Schwarzenegger. So why don't you tell our listeners what the first Predator is all about?
Absolutely. So Arnold stars as Dutch.
Come on!
He stars as Dutch, the leader of a military rescue team on a mission to save hostages being held in Central America. But what starts as a routine mission turns into a fight for survival as the team is hunted down one by one by a technologically advanced extraterrestrial force, the titular Predator.
Ooh.
That's basically what it's all about.
It is. It's a very simple premise. Make no mistake. This movie actually got critiqued heavily by critics upon its release because of its so-called thin plot. But in the way that I view it is it's an experience film, and it's a very simple adventure film. A bunch of, you know, macho, machismo, muscular, badass guys.
The most testosterone-fueled dudes you'll ever see.
Literally.
And Shane Black.
But so they go in there and, you know, they have to fight this thing that they can't see. And they're not used to that. They're used to going into an area, taking out a bunch of people, their rescue team, and they run into something that they haven't run into before, and they're all kind of really surprised by it. And as the film develops, you see each character's confidence slowly dwindle into nothing, and they deal with it their own individual way. And I think that's what's interesting about the film. Above all, this is an Arnold action movie, and that's why we love it so much.
Arguably the quintessential...
Quintessential?
Arnold action movie, yeah.
I'd go out on a limb and say it's in my top five. Those of you that are heavy listeners of the Epic Film Guys podcast, you know that back in February of this year, The Sauce and I actually counted down our top 10 Arnold Schwarzenegger films, and Predator did make my top five. It was my number four. I love this film very, very much. If you have not listened to that episode, and after listening to this one, you're interested in checking it out, please go ahead and find it at epicfilmguys.com. It was released on February 1st. But yes, it is. And it's Arnold at his best. He actually lost a bunch of weight for this movie. I don't know if you could tell that or not. He actually lost like 30 pounds because he wanted to look more lean and athletic for the role. But it is an Arnold movie. Make no mistake. It's got the one-liners. You know, when he throws a machete into a stick around, you know, it's literally got the opening of this film is amazing. And my wife had never watched it all the way through. She claimed that she did. But when I got the brand new Ultra 4K HD Blu-ray of the film, which, ladies and gentlemen, if you're thinking about picking it up and you're worried because of the DNR'd mess that was the last Blu-ray release, the Ultimate Hunter Edition, no worries. Please buy the Ultra 4K because it is a stunning transfer. Beautiful. But the opening of the movie is amazing. Literally, a chopper lands.
You mean a chopper?
A chopper. And then a close up shot of Arnold lighting a cigar. They let him get in like three or four puffs too before he gets out of the fucking. So it's like literally the most testosterone filled act of machismo ever. Puffing on that cigar as he gets out of the chopper. And then,
wait, can you make that noise again? All right, thanks.
It's probably going to come off a little bit sexual. I'm sorry. That's what happens on the Epic Film Guys. Sorry. But then we see Dutch walking to this little hut. And then we have probably, I would say outside of the Rocky movies, the most macho scene in film history.
You son of a bitch.
Literally. What other movie do you get a close-up of two muscular men's biceps? You hear that slap.
They clasp hands, yeah, and the biceps just, it's almost
you
like
son of a bitch.
It's almost like you're seeing an arm wrestling match without actually seeing an arm wrestling match because they clasp hands and the biceps are bulging, and it's over the top minus the family drama. But yeah, the oil, it's so 80s, it's so over the top. It's a little bit silly and dated now. Like every single time we play it at the Alamo Drafthouse and we have a full audience in the house and that scene comes on, people are dying laughing at that part. But it's part of the movie's charm because it starts out as your typical kind of 80s Arnold's action vehicle. But as the movie goes on, all of those elements kind of strip away until it becomes this incredibly primal and intense survival movie, basically, where it's just we start out with the group with this group of warriors, and then by the end, it's just Arnold and a predator fighting for survival. Like they're fighting each other in the jungle, basically. That's what it comes down to in the end.
And it's funny that we're mentioning Rocky, and we're mentioning, because Carl Weathers obviously Apollo Creed, you know, but the way this movie actually began development was after Rocky IV, there was a joke circulating in Hollywood that Rocky Balboa had literally run out of earthly opponents to fight. Literally, and that they would have him fight an alien in the fifth film if it was ever to be made. So screenwriters Jim and John Thomas actually took that inspiration from the joke and wrote a screenplay. And it was originally called Hunter. 20th Century Fox picked it up and they turned it over to producer Joel Silver, who actually produced another Arnold film we love, Commando. He decided to take that script and turn it into this science fiction, like pulpy army, big budget movie. And that's how this movie came to be. Arnold got the script handed to him. And of course, that's all history now.
The rest is history.
That's how that happened. So thank God for that stupid rumor about Rocky Balboa fighting an alien, because that's how we got Predator.
If Rocky Balboa did fight an alien, it would have made a better movie than Rocky V.
I would not disagree with that statement. I don't know anyone that likes Rocky V, but let's leave the Rocky movies to our Rocky B-side. Well, it won't be a B-side, but whatever we do before Creed 2, we'll probably be doing something, because I was in that damn movie, and I need to talk about it more because I need to heighten my ego a little bit more. Sorry. That's a thing. That's what happens when you have a small ego.
Small ego. Mm-hmm. Sure.
Hey, we're talking about Predator here. Look at these guys. When you look at the cast in this movie, you've got Jesse Ventura. You've got Shane Black. You've got Arnold Schwarzenegger. You've got all these great guys, these smaller time actors that are all fantastic. And I think that's what really sets this movie apart from a lot of other 80s actioners, is that the cast is really good. They have a fantastic chemistry with each other. You don't for one moment not believe that they're a team. Like, they feel like they're this cohesive unit together.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
And I think that sets it up perfectly when they're on their way to save these hostages, and they're on the they're in the choppers.
Bunch of slack-jawed faggots around here.
We're gonna say that line on the show, because that's a line spoken by one of the cast members. It's in
goddamn sexual Tyrannosaurus.
That's right.
I don't condone the use of that word, but it, I mean, for the time and for the character who's saying it, it fits and it makes me laugh.
It's okay in a 1987 action film. It's not it's not okay to do it in like Freddy versus Jason, because you're like, you know, 20 years later. Come on, get more creative than that.
Sure.
So our team lands. As soon as the team gets there, they realize that everything is not as it seems. They've been given this story, and that's why they decided to take this mission. And once they get there, they realize that things are a little bit fishy. We see that there's already been a rescue team that's made an attempt on the same mission, and they've basically been skinned alive. And they can't believe why. Why did the gorillas skin them? What, you know, it's beyond belief that it's a little bit more brutal than they're used to. And that's when it leads them to, they find a camp where a bunch of these mercenaries are there. And, well, Brian, that's, I think, probably the best action sequence of the entire film.
I'd say so, definitely, because, again, the movie kind of pulls out all the stops a little bit early, leading you to believe that it's going to be this explosive action extravaganza. And as the movie goes on, those elements kind of strip away until it's just down to its barest form. But the action in this early sequence is just terrific. People being blown away, people on fire. It's insane. And of course, you get the Arnold one-liners. He busts the door open, like, knock, knock. And I mean, it's great.
Yeah, literally.
It's great.
And so that's one of my favorite sequences. As a kid, when I watched this movie, I could not wait until we got to that sequence, because there's a lot of action sequences like that in 80s movies, but not done with that craft that John McTiernan handles here, which is surprising, because to mention his name, McTiernan had only done one big movie prior to that, starring Pierce Brosnan, which was Nomads. He wasn't like a big name or anything in Hollywood. He was an up-and-coming director. This movie showed how successful he could be, because the next year he did Die Hard. But
like, back-to-back, he directed two of the greatest action movies ever.
I love that sequence. But you are correct in saying that it is a little bit of like a little bit of a tease at something you're not going to get. That's not the movie you end up getting. So after that, they actually realize that Dylan, Carl Weathers' character, got them there on a setup to retrieve intelligence from captured operatives. And basically, they've been trying to get them forever. And his original team that he had sent in there got killed trying to capture it. So that was his mission the whole time. So they got there on a lie. So immediately there's this paranoia, there's this distrust. So there's a group of guys there, and they start to get paranoid as they're there, and they start seeing this thing kind of appear, because obviously the predator is able to blend into the jungle. And I think that's just as good of an opening as we can get to talk about the predator. It is probably, I would say, in the top five most iconic monsters in cinematic history.
The design of this thing is, there hasn't really been anything, there wasn't anything like it before, and there hasn't really been anything like it since. It's so unique and distinct. The dreadlocks, the mask, the whole reptilian, like, it's so bizarre, and you fully believe that this thing is an alien, a living, breathing thing. And it is just a cool design. I mean, are we going to talk about, we're going to talk about Stan Winston.
We have to. But first, before we get to Stan Winston, we have to talk about the original Predator design. And the first few weeks of shooting, the original Predator was played by none other than future action star Jean-Claude Van Damme. And anyone that loves this film already knows this, so I'm just basically talking about stuff you've already heard. You've already seen it 1,000 times. If you do a quick Google search, you can look at what the original Predator design was, and thank God. Thank God for Stan Winston, but thank God for James Cameron, because on an airplane, on a flight, Stan Winston was taking a flight, and none other than James Cameron happened to be on that flight. They decided to sit next to each other. They started talking about the movie that Stan was involved with, and they were having a problem with the creature. It wasn't working out. Jean-Claude Van Damme was getting overheated in that costume. He wanted to do the movie because he wanted to do all kinds of crazy kung fu stuff. He wanted to do all kinds of, you know, the stuff, his shtick, man. You know, that's what he wanted to do, like spin kicks, knocking out these dudes. And that's not what the movie entailed for him. So James Cameron actually assisted in the design of the Predator. And they came back and designed something so much better, so much more iconic. And for me, always growing up loving monsters and creatures, like, I think the most interesting thing about this is not only is it extremely intelligent, it is a predator. Its whole purpose is to track things down. It's a sport to it. And I love how it has that invisibility factor. We hadn't seen anything like that up until that point.
It has gadgets, and it's technologically, you know, advanced, and the fact that it's able to use technology to its advantage when it's hunting is really a cool idea. Especially in the jungle, you kind of have that clash of, like, they're stranded in the jungle and there's something coming at them and hunting them with technology. I don't know, it's just a really cool idea.
It definitely is. And again, going back to it, it's something we had not seen up until that point. We've seen plenty of aliens by that point in 1987. And a lot of people speculate on this. I don't know how you feel about this, but a lot of people actually think that they were influenced by James Cameron's Aliens and were just like, hey, what if Aliens was in the jungle instead of on a spaceship? I think that that's what makes this film so special, is it, all of those puzzle pieces got put together and the stars aligned for it. And it, like, when you have a creature designed by Stan Winston, one of the best in the business, still one of the best ever of all time, and you have a young up-and-coming thirsty director that's in the director's chair, with your main star being Arnold Schwarzenegger, at the time the biggest star in the world, not just action star, the biggest star in the world, the biggest box office draw in the world, you got your ducks in a row, and either you're going to nail this thing or you're not. And I think that McTiernan knocked it out of the park. After the failed rescue mission, our team is lost in the jungle, and they're just basically trying to find their rendezvous point out of it. They want to get extracted out of the jungle. And the members just start getting picked off one by one. The Predator is using thermal imaging in order to track them out. And he's basically, he's toying with them the entire time. He's an extremely intelligent being. And I think that the character that sets himself apart from the rest is Billy. He's adamant. He immediately notices, obviously you could tell he's the tracker of the team. He knows something's not right. And he can tell that they're being stalked. And that's when they start to realize, when they set camp for the night, that they need to set up traps. Once they set up traps, that's it. They know at that point that this thing is way more intelligent than them. And as you always like to say, hijinks ensue from there. We're not going to go into every single detail of this movie. Most of you have already seen this movie. We're not going to, like, you know, talk about it word for word. But Brian, what are some of your favorite things about this movie?
Oh, goodness. Well, the level of violence is something that I feel like we need to touch on.
No children, though. No children in danger here.
No small children get horribly killed, unfortunately. But I love 80s. Again, 80s action movies hold a special place in my heart because even though there are, I guess, brutal action movies being made today, there's nothing that compares to just how violent things were in the 80s. I mean, you get real squibs, you get real blood explosions, and this is a grisly movie. I mean, people get killed in horribly gruesome ways. And, you know, as a fan of violence, as a fan of practical effects and gore, I love it. It's my shit.
A great example would be probably one of my favorite pieces of gore in the entire movie is when Dylan finally mans up and he's like, fuck it, I fucked up. I'm the reason why all these guys are here. These guys are getting picked off. They're dying. I'm going to go after this thing. Once they realize what this thing is and they track it down and they think, okay, we got it. We're good. And the predator shoots him in the arm and you see his arm literally in slow motion.
Yeah.
Sliced off clean with the machine gun, and it's just slowly pumping bullets still. And he's yelling. It's literally one of the most awesome scenes I've ever seen in any movie.
For sure. What about you, Justin? What's one of your favorite moments?
I mean, we got to get to the ending here. We got two other movies to talk about. So we could talk about this, but we could do a whole fucking commentary on this movie. But once Dutch is the last one standing, he realizes that he's either going to kill this thing or he's going to die trying. He realizes the cloaking device, that the thermal imaging is its strong point. So when he's covered in mud after being in the mud in the water, he notices that the predator walks right by him. Nick, I already know what you're going to say. Nick's actually probably going to interject because it's one of the things he hates the most about this movie.
Yeah, well, let's take a moment then, because Nick has a problem with the fact that cold mud. The predator can't see when Arnold is slathered with cold mud. What are your feelings on this, Justin? Do you care to defend the movie,
it's
or do you agree
movie.
With Nick?
But but it has been determined, just like pigs roll in mud to keep themselves cool when it's hot. It has been determined that for a very short period of time, in colder environments, in colder weather, if you covered yourself in cold mud, it could lower your body temperature. So it's just stretch truth.
It's
science
plausible.
Fiction movie. It's a sure, science sure. fiction movie. Obviously, the monster has to have some weakness, or it would be invincible. And you can't have an invincible monster up against Arnold, because Arnold can't die. Arnold has to be the hero. Arnold has to kill the predator, or at least fight it, or at least be a match for it. So I think it's a very interesting way of having it that be its only weakness, is when it's using its heat signatures to view out its prey, the mud just camouflaged him slightly. Obviously, he sees little bits and pieces of heat here and there. What he's looking for is a giant, you know what I mean? Like a large human-sized amount
sure.
of heat source. So it's not like, you know, again, it's a movie. But I think to close out our thoughts on the movie and just kind of get our final thoughts on the first Predator, I just love that old man versus beast, which is something yeah. we've seen in so many movies. It's classic. And Arnold just uses brute force and, of course, intelligence to make traps and to try to kill the predator. And we see literally, I would say, probably the most iconic fight scene Arnold has in any movie when he plays a human character.
Well, because by that point, because Dutch is the only one left, the predator kind of views him as a worthy
of course.
Adversary, a worthy opponent. So that's when we get the predator stripped down. He takes the mask off and everything, and we see the first glimpse of the pincers and the vagina mouth.
That is what it's called. That is, it is a vagina mouth with fangs. You don't want to stick your dick in that mouth. I'll tell you that right now. It might hurt a little.
Speak for yourself. But Danny Glover even calls him Pussyface in Predator 2.
We'll be getting there shortly here.
But I just, that final face off, it's like I said, it's primal. It's it's so basic. It's just you're in the jungle, survive. Like it's extremely effective, and yeah,
you're one I love it. Ugly motherfucker. I love it so much. And again, I understand some criticisms of the film, but it's a very simple premise, and it executes it perfectly. A bunch of guys go into the jungle. There's an alien there. They have to fight it. And that's the movie. And what I love about this thing is that it makes a jungle that's huge feel claustrophobic. Not mm-hmm. many films can do that.
Yeah, there's great cinematography in this thing, too. Like, it's very placid. It's not like quick cutting. It's very like the camera allows you to take in the jungle, take in the environments and the atmosphere. And it's a really well shot movie. Like there's craft behind it. If you gave this material to maybe another director, they may not have done it with even the ounce of craft that McTiernan injected into the proceedings.
Yeah. At the ending there, you see Dutch asking the Predator, "What the hell are you?" And then the Predator tries to get the last laugh. He's that intelligent where mm-hmm. he actually sets a self-destruct device while hearing that human laugh that he had recorded earlier.
Which is so disturbing.
It's so creepy. And and after this all happens and Dutch actually gets picked up and saved, he looks like the most beaten man you've ever seen. This man's been through hell. And he's human. And this is probably one of Arnold's more human action heroes, because you see him go through this and you've seen him only almost get destroyed. He's lost almost basically his whole team. He's lost everything. And he actually beats this thing. So for me, this movie is in the record books as one of the best action movies ever made. Again, it's my number 4 favorite Arnold movie ever made. But I can't leave this discussion real quick without talking about Alan Silvestri's amazing score for the film. Hot on the heels of Back to the Future, he jumped on and did this movie, and I love the score for this movie.
Oh, me too. Absolutely. Silvestri's score is iconic, and it kind of makes its way into the other Predator movies as well, we'll talk about. It's almost like the Terminator movies, where I can't imagine a Terminator film without the Terminator theme.
Well, we'll see if we get the theme in the Predator next week, but we cannot leave this conversation. This man's name will come up again in a Predator 2, but Kevin Peter Hall, who ended up actually taking over for Jean-Claude Van Damme to play the Predator, was amazing in this film. It's not an easy job. These guys that go in these giant monster suits, you know, to play these characters. This guy was huge. He's gigantic. I mean, literally, he was so huge compared to Arnold. He was 7 feet, 2 inches. He needed to get a big guy to tower over Arnold, and he did the job well. And he actually gave a really great performance in that costume. I think it's extremely difficult to do something like that. And
there's a character there. Yeah.
Yeah. There's character there. His mannerisms, his movements, especially with those claws, the way the fingers would move very fluidly. I mean, the man's amazing, and I'm glad that he comes back for Predator 2. But I don't think that it's necessary to do ratings, but you know what? We do ratings on the show. So
10 out of 10.
There you have it. That's Saucy's rating. And for me, for the films that we're talking about tonight, it's definitely a 9 out of 10. It's one of the best action films ever made. It's again,
if it's one of the greatest action movies ever made, why a 9 out of 10? Why not a 10 out of 10?
It's close to a perfect movie. If we did 0.5s on the show, it would probably get a 9.5. It's not.
But Justin, you've told me countless times we don't do 0.5.
I know. That's why it's getting
get out of here with that.
That's why it's getting a 9 out of 10 rating for me. I love this movie. It's literally probably top 20.
If you were doing 0.5s, it would round up to a 10. I'm just giving you a hard time.
You have to give me a hard time. Otherwise, we would just be agreeing with each other and that would be boring. But that's it for the first Predator. We've already talked about it plenty of times on the show. I've talked about it on Podstalgic with my buddy Pete. It's been a thing.
Nick loves it.
Nick, oh God, Nick loves it. Oh, he loves it so much. That's why he's not here talking about it, because he loves the pussy face monster. He loves it so much, he wants to stick his wee-wee in the pussy face monster's mouth. He wants to see how good it feels.
I don't blame him.
I do. I don't know. Let's move on. A few years later, to Predator 2. So this is a movie that I feel like in the fan community, it definitely has a cult following, but it is pretty mixed. Now, recently, upon the Predator box set being released on Ultra 4K, it came with it, so I got it and I rewatched it. This is a movie that, as a kid, I would randomly watch. I didn't own it, but I was pleasantly surprised upon my recent watch of the film. Brian, that tagline. The tagline.
I love this tagline, and I'm glad you brought this up because I wanted to mention it, but get this. So on the poster, on the original theatrical release poster, the tagline is, "He's in town with a few days to kill."
I fucking love that so much.
Isn't that great?
Dude, why can't we have... Okay, number one, why can't movies just be like... Why can't we have sequels that are just the title, then two? Okay? Why can't that be a thing again? And two...
Sequel titles back then were very creative. For example, the Die Hard sequel, Die Harder. That's great.
Yeah. But why can't we have taglines like that that are so amazing? I don't know.
It is very clever, but I guess we should talk about the plot a little bit. So
go ahead and tell our listeners what Predator 2 is all about.
So this sequel, it's not even really a sequel. It's kind of like a remake almost, just in a different location. Predator 2 is basically Predator in the city. That's pretty much it. But you follow Police Lieutenant Mike Harrigan, played by, of course, Danny Glover, who is an interesting replacement for the Arnold character in this. But he's investigating gruesome murders that he believes are the result of gang violence, when in fact, it's the work of the Predator, of course, wreaking havoc in the urban jungle of Los Angeles. And for some reason, this movie takes place in 1997. This movie came out in 1990. So it's like 7 years in the future. They thought that would be a good idea to just put it 7 years in the future. Not in the present. In the very near future of 1997. I don't understand it.
Yeah, I think they were trying to go for that whole cliche of having a dystopian future type thing. I mean, the opening sequence, we see that they're in Los Angeles and it's basically on its way to being in ruins because of the crime level. There was a lot of people were really thinking in the early 90s that Los Angeles would end up being like that, that reality of constant crime all over the place. Gangs would take over because there was a serious crime issue in Los Angeles at that time. So, I mean, gangs were a huge thing. There's still gangs there. I mean, make no mistake, there's still gangs there now. But I mean, police departments and local authorities have kind of smashed down on a lot of the problems that were there. But I think it was just a way to differentiate itself from the first Predator. Now, we don't know the facts, ladies and gentlemen. We were not in that room with the suits when they were making the decisions on this movie. But this movie came out 3 years after the original, though the original was a surprise hit. It made $90 million at the box office, so they said, we have to make a sequel to this thing. There are rumors that Arnold did not return over a dispute over the salary, because at the time he was the highest paid actor in the world. And other rumors state that he just didn't like the script. And of course, this movie came out 1 year before, probably the film that most people would say is the best action film ever made, which is Terminator 2. So he had that on his plate. They were trying to get the next Terminator film off the ground. Different movie, different conversation. But Predator 2 is something, like I said, it's fans either really love this movie or they don't like it at all. When I was a kid and I watched this movie, it didn't gel because I was like, oh, why is Danny Glover in this? Like, I love the Lethal Weapon movies. He's fine in those. But he, as you said, he's an interesting choice. I couldn't find anywhere, as much as I digged all over the internet, if they had any other choices other than Danny Glover. Like, can you think about it? After the first Predator, was it just they wanted to really try to differentiate itself from the first film?
I think so. And that's what I admire about this movie. They tried to do something completely different with the concept. I mean, it is, for all intents and purposes, it's basically the same movie. It's just in a different location and with a different vibe and cast. And we get to see more aspects of the Predator that we did not get to see in the first movie. So for what it is, I think I like Predator 2 a lot. It has its charms for sure. Again, a different beast than the first one, but worthy in its own right, I think.
I think a lot of fans probably went into this hoping they would see the same thing they saw in the first film. And I love the way the film opens. It kind of teases you a little bit because the opening shot is kind of scanning over forest. And you're like, oh, man, okay, so they're going to be in a forest, or they're going to be like in a jungle again. Okay, there we go. Oh, wait. Oh, there's Los Angeles. Oh, wow. They just fooled me. I think it's a very, very cute little shot in the opening there. Now, this film is actually directed by a young man, Stephen Hopkins, that directed a movie that you're not too fond of, A Nightmare on Elm Street 5, The Dream Child, which I actually kind of like.
Well, A Nightmare on Elm Street 5, my problems with it lie not in the direction. So certainly not in the production design. That movie has a lot of creative stuff going on. And I think it's a well put together piece of work, but the screenplay is just complete and total utter nonsense.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I feel like he's an interesting choice because it's not like he made like this big box office smash or anything, but he has a lot of creativity visually, and I think he brings a visual sense to Predator 2 that's very flashy, it's very stylish, it's very glossy, but it's also very brutal. I would probably go out on a limb and say that Predator 2 is even more violent and more mean-spirited than the original.
It's a nasty film. Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's why a lot of critics had a problem with it. Roger Ebert said it was, you know, disgusting, and he lamented against the gruesome violence in this movie. And this was cut down from an NC-17
rating,
right, apparently.
It was.
Because it was so, I mean, this movie does linger on like the skinned bodies and all of the mutilated, you know, corpses and stuff. And I can only imagine what they had to cut out, because this movie is already plenty sickly violence on its own.
Well, I mean, the film opens with a turf war between these heavily armed Colombian and Jamaican drug cartels. I mean, a predator is just watching this shootout between police and Colombians, and you're seeing people just getting blown away. The whole sequence is like probably like 7 minutes long, and it's like you're just seeing cops getting squibs blowing apart, like explosions, and all these bad guys are just killing these cops. Like, it really is a really disturbing scene to watch, but also very enjoyable.
Oh yeah, and I guess that's kind of the movie in a nutshell. It's enjoyable. It has, like you said, a kind of this vibe to it that's different from the first one, and that like it's interesting the way some of these scenes are shot. You and I were watching this film together, and we were talking about the framing of a particular scene where they're in the police station, and the whole scene is shot through like the blinds of the office. And it's like, we were like talking about like, why would they decide to frame it this way? It's not like it's bad. It's just interesting. Like, it's just a lot of these scenes, the way they decided to film them are just interesting and different, and not like anything that we are used to seeing in movies like this. But it is like everyone's like sweaty because this is taking place during a heat wave of some sort, and everyone's just drenched in sweat.
Literally,
the entire
every
movie.
Single time you look, they have sweat stains under their arms. Everyone does. Imagine the PA's job on that set where they're like, okay, Jimmy, go out and spray everyone's underarms real quick. Hurry up. Because anytime you see anyone walking down the street in any shot, and they make sure to have the actors lift their arms up, or, you know, do a lot of motion so that you can see that they have sweat under their arms. It's all over their face.
Yeah, absolutely. And the cast in this movie as well, like the first one, it's an ensemble of really great character actors. So we mentioned Danny Glover. He plays the kind of the hard-headed cop, and he's a good center for the movie. And then, of course, has his partners Bill Paxton, the great late Bill Paxton.
You know what I think? And you had said Danny Glover was good in this, and I think he's fine. I think he's a fine substitute. He plays another stubborn cop, just like he was in the Lethal Weapon movies. But you know what would have been interesting? Bill Paxton is actually really entertaining in this movie. I know they play him more for comedy relief than anything else, which he's very good at as well. But imagine like Bill Paxton in that main role. That would be even more interesting, in my opinion. He's very savvy, or at least he thinks he is. He thinks he's slick with the ladies. He's definitely not. But he actually pushed his way to be on this task force, to be part of this, because he's paid his dues and he wants to be this hard, you know, hard grit, gritty LAPD cop. But I really love him in this movie. It just goes to show the, you know, the level of complexity he can bring to a role where he can be this badass guy, but he can also be a lovable guy and have a hard edge to him. He can also just make you laugh the entire film.
Absolutely. Yeah. As Bill Paxton does, he's great in just about every role. But I also want to talk about the Predator himself, or itself, rather, in this movie. So they changed the design, obviously, because this is a different Predator this time around. What do you think of the new design of the Predator in this film?
Well, supposedly, Brian, they designed the Predator to look more urban and hip, and actually more hip-hop than its predecessor.
Now, what in God's name is that supposed to mean?
Supposedly, there's like, I mean, if you look carefully, there's like a tribal design on his forehead. He's got brighter skin coloration. And even Stan Winston had said, the broad concept's the same. The difference is this is a different individual of the same species. As in, a snake is a snake, but different snakes are different. Their colorings are different, different parts of their characteristics, their facial structures, subtle differences. So that's the way they were looking at it, but they definitely tried to make the Predator look more like a badass urban dude hanging out in the corner selling rock, I guess. That's what I took from that statement. I don't know.
Okay.
I like the look. As we see in future movies, they do change the look of the Predator a lot. And this is the last film that Kevin Peter Hall did as the Predator, because unfortunately, sadly, he passed away from AIDS in 1992. So he left his family, and he did have a great legacy. Not only did he play the Predator in the first two Predator movies, but he was also Harry from Harry and the Hendersons, which is a childhood favorite of
what?
Mine.
Really?
Yeah, he's Harry. He's Harry the Sasquatch. love him. He brought so much to the role. But there's another character in this movie. I would say he was a really big actor in the early 90s. Gary Busey plays Special Agent Peter Case, who is posing as a DEA agent leading a special task force who was supposedly investigating a drug conspiracy that was basically a cover for his attempts to capture the Predator. So this whole time, like, his whole task force is kind of semi-aware of this thing. They figure it out, and then they're trying to catch and capture the Predator.
That's right. And the son of Gary Busey's character, Keyes, is that his name? Keyes?
Yep.
Is going to be in the new Predator movie. So we'll see. You know, Shane Black is trying to tie the whole legacy of the Predator franchise together, it seems like. Or at least, at the very least, acknowledge that part two is in the same continuity.
I sure as hell hope so. We can't have a Predator movie that comes after the first film. We can't have that with Predator. There's no reason to. Predator 2 is a fine sequel to the first film. Sure, it's nowhere near as good as the first film. And sure, it's just like a basic sequel of the early 90s. But it's still really entertaining. It's bloody as hell. It's gory. It's got likable characters. I still deep down feel like they could have gotten a better lead than Danny Glover. I love Danny Glover in a lot of movies. Hell, he was in Sorry to Bother You a few months ago, and I thought he was fantastic in it. But I don't think that he's a worthy successor to Arnold Schwarzenegger. He does fine when you see him fighting the Predator in the film. There are some great action sequences to be had. But he doesn't have that gravitas. He doesn't have that presence that Arnold has to fight this giant monster.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you there, because you look at Arnold and he's Arnold, and you look at Danny Glover and he's Danny Glover. I mean, there's not really much more to say. But I mean, as I said, I admire the film for going a different route, a different direction. It would have been very easy to cast, I don't know, Van Damme.
Van Damme, Dolph Lundgren, or I mean, yeah. who even else at the time? There's plenty of actors. You could have had Mel Gibson in there. You could have gotten a number of different actors that could have taken on that role. But I think a lot of people stepped away from it, because who wants to do a sequel to a movie that Arnold was, you know, the main star in, that was wildly successful, but you're going to play second fiddle to Arnold? No one wanted to do that. So I feel like Danny Glover was like, fuck it.
I'll do it.
I'm in between Lethal Weapon movies. What the fuck else am I doing? So he decided to do it. Gary Busey, though, plays a fruitcake in this movie, as he plays in a lot of other movies. He's crazy. One of my favorite scenes in the film, and I feel like is one of the most interesting and visually impressive scenes, is at the end of the film where they're trying to cool everything down. And basically, which is like a meat house with all these, you know, cow torsos, slabs of meat hanging. It's like a meat factory. And when the predator throws his disc, and it's like slicing through all those slabs of beef, and then it like cuts him in half. I just love that sequence. I think that's probably my favorite sequence of the entire film is the end sequence.
I agree. That's when things really come to a head, and we get to see the predator's
a ship.
Different.
We see a ship.
We get to see different weaponry of the predator. That flying disc. We get to see what happens when a predator's injured. How he takes care of himself and uses first aid techniques, and then we also get to see the spacecraft, which it is. Kind of blew my mind a little bit because I'd heard about it, but I'd never seen the moment where we see the interior of the Predator ship and we see other skulls from its other conquests. Because the Predators keep the skulls and the
trophies.
Spinal cords and stuff as trophies of their kills. And so we get to see the other skulls of their victims, and we see a xenomorph
dun,
skull.
Dun, dun. Yeah, and that was imagine the hype at that time.
Yeah, I know, like, of course now I know that the Alien versus Predator films are a thing, and that, you know, eventually these two, we got to see them fight, however disappointing and lackluster and awful.
Yeah,
it
you
was.
Have never watched them, so again, as I said earlier in the opening,
no,
of this
seen,
show,
I've seen the first one. I've seen the first Alien versus Predator. I've not seen Requiem. If you're sitting in the audience in 1990 watching this movie, just I can't even imagine the level of excitement to have even to see the xenomorph skull. I mean, that's just awesome.
And that led to the comics, man. That led to the Alien versus Predator comics, and it took so long to get a film made. But I know what you're saying. Like, when I watched it as a kid, that was one of the reasons why I wanted to watch the movies, because I had heard about it. That you saw a xenomorph skull on the wall of the Predator, and they loom on it. They make sure to focus in on it for a certain period of time. So you're like, oh, that's what that is. Oh, shit. But I love at the ending how this is the first time we see not just one Predator, but we see a bunch of Predators. After Danny Glover, Mike Harrigan, defeats the Predator, the other Predators come through, and they actually pretty much accept him as an equal.
Yeah.
And they drag off their fallen warrior.
So it's kind of a callback to the first one, because as the Predator does with Arnold in the first one, you get the sense that the Predators are highly intelligent beings throughout the film, based on how they hunt. But they also are beings that are capable of respect and honor and recognizing you know, someone who has hunted well, you know, and that's why they leave Danny Glover alive at the end. So you get the sense that the Predators are capable of honor and respect and recognizing that.
Yep.
I'm just going to leave it there.
There you go. And that's it for Predator 2, ladies and gentlemen. It is a worthy sequel to an extent. I think it's a great time. I think it's actually a blast. I think it's one of the most fun early 90s actioners to watch. And I love how gory and mean-spirited it is. And I love how there's Jamaicans or dudes playing Jamaicans with really fucking bad accents. Because that's really fun. And I think that one of my favorite sequences is when, you know, the whole old lady in her flat, and the Predator is trying to fix himself up in the bathroom. When she sees the Predator smash through the wall, and then Danny Glover is running through the apartment, that's priceless. It's early 90s at its best. So, Brian, if you had to slap a rating on Predator 2, what would you give it?
Oh, man. Again, nowhere near on the level of the original. Doesn't hold a candle to it. But I'm going to have to go ahead and slap a 6 out of 10 on this thing. I enjoy it. It's fun. It's mindless entertainment. And I, again, I think that the different direction that it took was actually brave. I'm actually going to go so far as to say that it's a brave choice, because it would have been very easy to make Predator 2, put him in the jungle again and bring Arnold back. And it would have been very easy for this to turn into just another unoriginal sequel. But for what it is, I enjoy it very much. I've only seen it a couple times, but I am looking forward to watching it many more.
Fantastic. And I'm going to go a little crazy here, but for as far as 90s action films are concerned, I'm going to give it a 7 out of 10. I think it's a good movie. As far as 90s action movies are concerned, it's one of those movies that I could definitely put in any time of the week. It's one of those comfort movies, and I talk about that a lot on the show. I could throw that in if I'm sad, if I'm drunk, if I'm sober, if I'm feeling good, or if I'm feeling bad. And it's going to give me that feeling of just 90s nostalgia. The action is great. There's plenty of violence to be had. And the Predator does awesome shit in the movie. Alan Silvestri's score is back. It's fantastic. You know, we've got Kevin Hall back again as the Predator. So, I mean, you can't really beat that.
I just love the fact that you call this a comfort movie, considering how like mind-numbingly violent and grotesque and brutal and bloody it is.
Well, I can't account for taste other than my own, and that's just kind of my thing. So there it is, 7 out of 10 for me for Predator 2, which did not make nearly as much as the original, because let's face it, Danny Glover's not Arnold Schwarzenegger. He's not the biggest star in the world. I mean, well, that's just the way the cookie crumbles. But we're moving on to a movie that you just watched for the first time ever. It's a movie that came out a long time after Predator 2, and it had a lot of stigma to it because this movie came after those movies we talked about a little bit earlier in the show that we're not talking about tonight, but may possibly talk about in the future. Yeah, those movies, people kind of really just pretend it never happened. So Predators was an attempt by Robert Rodriguez, who produced the film with Troublemaker Studios, to wipe away the bad taste in your mouth from the Alien versus Predator movies and give you something that was back to basics, something that really brought you back to what made you love the first Predator film in the first place. Brian, why don't you tell our listeners what Predators is all about?
So the movie opens with a group of warriors and mercenaries who awake in Freefall, and they land pretty harshly in a mysterious jungle. And at first you think that the jungle is on Earth, but they discover that they're in fact on another planet. Of course, the home planet of the Predators themselves. And now the hunt is on, as they have to fight to survive against this new breed of ultimate hunters.
So I got to ask you first and foremost, because I saw this movie opening weekend, first night. I was so excited for it. I still remember it like it was yesterday. And I remember there being like 15, 20 other people in a pretty empty theater. But you saw for the first time this past weekend, we watched it. What were your initial thoughts on this movie?
I was incredibly impressed by Predators. I was not expecting a whole lot going in. Robert Rodriguez, he didn't direct the film, but I think he's a problematic figure, especially considering, you know, the way he makes movies now is not the way that he made movies starting out in his career. His are very low budget affairs that he makes in his garage with terrible green screen and special effects. And at least those are the last few movies that he's made. So I was kind of worried that this would seem low budget and cheap, but they actually shot this thing, as I assume, just from the look of it, they shot it like in the jungle. This thing wasn't shot on a soundstage or against a green screen. This is very tactile and very, real. Like, it feels real. I really enjoyed the buildup of everything, how you're not really sure what's going on as it starts. Again, like, if you hadn't seen the trailer, I'm sure you would think that it was just on Earth. But there's an incredible moment where the group you know, reaches a clearing and they see the skyline, and there's like different planets and galaxies off in the distance. And it's like, it's amazing because that's the moment, you know, like shit's about to get real. Yeah, I was really impressed by this movie again, like the action sequences, and again, the fact that there are practical effects in this thing. Of course, there's some CGI. There's some really questionable CGI, which I guess we can talk about later, because a couple of the effects don't hold up, especially viewing it on a 4K television.
Well, they didn't hold up then either.
Right.
But the funny thing is there's actually a really interesting story about the development of this movie. This film was produced by Robert Rodriguez, but in 1994, he actually wrote an early script of this same movie for Fox while he was working on Desperado. He gave the script to the studio and he was denied because they realized the budget would be too large. And after, you know, Predator 2 didn't make nearly as much money as they had hoped for, they passed on it. But he wrote the initial treatment for this movie in 1993. So it's crazy.
Wow.
15 years later, the studio decided to go with the script because they're like, you know, what else are we going to do? We've already shit on the franchise with two Alien versus Predator movies, but that's how they hired him. They had hired him to write a Predator story while he was waiting for Desperado to get made. He came up with it, and then they decided to do Desperado instead. They wanted him to redo the franchise based on his early work that they saw. So it's interesting to me, Brian, and I wonder how this film would have turned out had he directed it himself. I mean, his touch is on it, but it doesn't really feel like a Robert Rodriguez movie, visually at least. And you had actually pinpointed that right in the beginning, because they shot most of this all in a real jungle. And I really appreciate that. There's some fantastic, beautiful cinematography in this film, but we're going to get to that in a little bit. Let's start with the cast. Okay, so in the first Predator, we have Arnold. In Predator 2, we have Danny Glover. And following his win for an Oscar in The Pianist, we have Adrian Brody as this character, Royce. We don't hear his name for like three quarters of the movie, but what do you think of him as the lead in the film?
Adrian Brody is good in this movie. I think he, again, I don't think they tried too hard necessarily to even try to do something similar to Arnold in the first one. Even though Adrian Brody did bulk up for the role, it's very clear that he gained some, you know, he put on like 25 pounds of muscle for this movie. So they didn't really try to compete like physically with Arnold. But he is a really great grounded presence in this movie. He is someone who doesn't take any shit, and he basically assumes leadership of this group, because this is, you know, a group of mercenaries and ne'er-do-wells and no-good-nicks, basically. And he's kind of the one who takes charge, somewhat reluctantly at first, but he's the one who takes charge and really rallies the troops, as they say.
Yeah.
And I think he does a great job. There's a lot of complexity to this role, and I think Adrian Brody does really well.
I totally agree. And actually, the director, Nimrod Antal, I apologize if I butchered that, actually came out and said that we thought casting a physically Schwarzenegger-esque character would have done the original film a disservice, and would have done this film a disservice because we are not trying to remake or copy the original film. I told everybody that early on, and a lot of people thought that was a tough thing to deal with. What I can't teach them to do is act. So Brody, again, is an amazing talent. I think he gives a fantastic performance in this film, especially as the film moves on. But Brian, he's not the only Oscar winner that's in this movie.
Oscar winner Topher Grace.
Get the fuck out of here. Ever heard of a movie called Moonlight?
That is right. Mahershala Ali is in this film, who's fantastic as well as Mombasa. all the cast. I mean, we could talk. I mean, Walton Goggins.
Goggins is in this. You got Goggins. You got Danny Trejo. I mean, even though he's in it for a little bit. I mean, obviously, it's a Robert Rodriguez produced movie. Of course, Danny Trejo is going to be in it. But even Alice Braga
Machete.
As Isabel. I mean, we have a former U.S. Special Ops soldier. We've got a sniper from Israel Defense Forces. We have a Russian commando. We have a Yakuza enforcer. We have a fucking cartel enforcer.
That dude's probably my favorite character in the movie. The Yakuza guy.
We have all these dudes that are totally handpicked by the Predators for a reason. You know why? Because this is their competition. They throw these people down into this environment and they hunt them. This is like a game to them. And I actually really love the idea of that plot. I love that these guys are just like, they don't know where they are. They were doing something in their normal daily life and they blacked out and they're falling out of it. They're falling out of the sky. They don't even know what happened. Imagine that. Now, I feel like if the opening had been done a little bit better, maybe a little bit more money was put into the opening. That's one of the things you're probably referring to as far as the effects are concerned, because it looks a little bit shoddy. But
That looks fine. I'm okay with that. There's a real bad, like, keyed-in explosion at the end of the movie. And anyway.
Again, smaller budget for this movie. It's not like Fox wanted to throw out a bunch of money. They only gave a $40 million budget. And hey, the movie ended up making $127 million, so it's not like they lost money.
There you go.
But no, I mean, like, for me, that's what made the original so special. And we talked about that earlier when we were talking about John McTiernan's Predator, is that that cohesive unit of the guys, no matter how macho or over the top they were, they felt like they were a team. They cared about each other. They had each other's backs. They were like a family of sorts. And this is a movie where you have these misfits. It's almost like a Dirty Dozen-esque type feeling to it. You throw all these different people in a room or in the jungle, per se, and you have to see how they react to each other and how they help each other to survive. And I think the cast is fantastic here. I think they picked out some great people.
100% agreed. They really do feel like a cohesive unit. And there's a lot of great shots of them just kind of walking through the jungle. The camera will be fixed and they'll be walking like side profile. And it's very, it's almost like you want to put those images of them all walking in single file and like put it on a poster and put it in your room. It's all very artfully done, I think, as far as these movies go.
They tried. And I think that's the key thing here after two dismal attempts.
I turned to you at one point. I'm like, they gave a shit when they were making this movie. They actually cared.
Yeah. You looked at me. You looked at me and you were like, they actually tried. And I'm like, I never said they didn't. but that was the thing for me coming off of being extremely disappointed with the AVP movies. You could tell there was a director here that had a vision. You could tell that the actors cared and they really wanted to try to make something good. Now, do I think that it lives up to the original? Definitely not. Do I think it's better than the second film? Sometimes no, sometimes yes. I think that there's something special about seeing the Predators in a jungle, because obviously their invisibility factor, the jungle is a very strange and dangerous place, and it's very scary to be there. Being in Los Angeles, hey, I can go in a crack house and kill a bunch of crackheads and hide out in there for a little while, you know? But the jungle is like, that's a wild place to be.
You can do what now?
Well, dude, the Hopester. I mean, dude, I could find out where he lives and beat him to death with a bat, and then just stay wherever he's living and hide from a predator there, because the predator would never go where the Hopester lives.
You know what? That's probably true. Yeah. I don't know of anyone who'd want to live with the Hopester.
Even the Predator is scared of the Hopester. But I feel like they tried to bring it back to basics. Like, what made the first film work? Jungle. Okay. Group of ragtag guys or, you know, individuals in the jungle. And that's what they attempted here.
But it doesn't feel like a retread of the original. To me, it wasn't like Alien Covenant, where it's like, okay, you're lifting dialogue wholesale from the original just to, you know, give us nostalgia boners, I guess. This felt more like, okay, there's a genuine love for the original, and they really wanted to pay respect and homage, because it felt like a movie made by a fan, and Robert Rodriguez is a fan of the original.
And even John Debney's score, They definitely go out of their way to harken back to Silvestri's original themes. You hear those themes throughout this entire score. The film opens with them, and I think that's fantastic. And I think that adds to that little bit of nostalgia that we were hoping for after the AVP movies. We really wanted to feel that feeling when we watched the original film in this movie, and I think that helped a lot with it.
Yeah, and there are plenty of new things in this movie. I mean, just the fact that we're seeing the Predator's home world is really...
Well, it's their it's not their home world. It's their hunting grounds. It's their hunting planet.
Sure. So forgive me. It's their hunting planet. But we do get to see like other creatures besides just the Predators. There are these little dog-like...
Predator dogs, man. The Pred
monsters.
Dogs.
Yeah. And they're terrifying. I would say about as... terrifying as the Predators themselves.
Well, it takes
a lot
to get them down, though. It takes we see these guys heavily equipped. They're armed to the teeth, the machine guns, chain guns, you know, and it takes like a whole shitload of bullets to kill one of those things. They're heavily armored, so yeah.
Yeah, and they're quick. And they'll rip your face off, as we've seen. But yeah, so I feel like this movie is original enough, right?
Right. It does what a lot of movies are doing now. It's not quite there. Not quite the Force Awakens approach, which we talk about a lot on the show, because that is literally the approach of everything now. Bring back an actor from one of the previous movies, make it feel like the previous movies, and then let the audience know we're going to move it forward to something slightly different, but you can still feel the same way you felt about the original. It almost gets there. This is before that whole thing was like a business model for, you know, films/corporations. It really did try to make a decent movie. And personally, I don't understand why fans hate it. I think it's a lot of fun. I don't know why people give it a lot of shit. Like in the fan community, I saw recently when we decided we were going to talk about it, I saw an article posted by Bloody Disgusting, which is a news site that I've been following ever since I was like 18 years old. Love them, respect them. And they had said, it's time to recognize that this movie is great. And I read the comment section on social media and literally there are people spewing hate. And I'm like, dude, it's just a lot of fun. Like, what's there to hate about this movie? We have more than one predator in this movie. We have predators versus predators in this movie.
Which is
awesome. There's a whole lot of stuff to really just enjoy. Like,
there is a dude that fights a predator with a samurai sword. It's the coolest thing you'll ever see in your life.
Legit.
It's my favorite scene in the movie.
I don't think there's much to complain about, except for... we got to talk about that elephant in the room. And for some reason, this guy, I'm surprised that he's still alive in Hollywood the way people pick themselves off or they overdose. Topher Grace. I mean, he's always the guy that's that black sheep in the room that just doesn't fit the film. Spider-Man 3, Predators. He does not fit this movie at all. I think he's supposed to be there for like some kind of comic relief because everyone else is so serious. Everyone else is so strong and masculine or tough. When it comes to Isabel's character, but he just doesn't seem to fit for me. And there is a small twist. And if you haven't seen the film, we're not going to spoil this entirely. There is a small twist in the film, Brian, which kind of, I was waiting to see how it would affect you. It did affect you the way that I thought it would affect you because it comes out of left field and it doesn't really work at the end of the film.
Yeah, it doesn't work. And it's kind of, cringy when you see Topher Grace trying to play this particular character. It reminded me a lot of, and again, without spoiling anything, but think Charlie Day in Pacific Rim Uprising.
Oh, no.
That's the kind of level we're dealing with.
No one wants to remember that,
Brian.
No one wants to remember that movie. God.
Yeah. But that's what it reminded me of. It's like, okay, you have this character, and now on a dime, he's a completely different character. And it just, it doesn't work. And Topher Grace is, I don't hate on the guy nearly as much as a lot of people seem to. He's fine throughout most of the movie. And then there's that pivotal moment where it's like, oh, you're doing this.
Yeah. You know? So I don't understand what they were trying to do with that. I think the film would have worked perfectly fine up until that point without having to add that in. But I think they wanted to have some kind of little bit of a twist there, but it just didn't work for me. And I think that if anything, that's definitely one of the things that takes off points on my rating for this movie, because everything else up until that point, it's a fine actioner. It's fun. It's got energy to it. I love the way it's shot. Yes, it has a smaller budget, so the CGI, even for 2010, is not up to par with other films that were being released at the time. But we have guys, even Derek Mears. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. Jason Voorhees from the Friday the 13th remake. He's a predator in the movie. You know, there's great stuff to be had in this movie.
We have Lawrence Fishburne doing a cameo.
I was just about to say, we got to bring him up. Not even say cameo. He's a very interesting character. What did you think about his character? He plays Noland, this guy that's been basically on this planet for a long time surviving.
He has you're not really sure how you feel about him because he's so odd.
Well, there's a scene where he saves the team.
Yeah.
But they find out he could have saved them on more than one occasion. And then he brings them in. He welcomes them into his little hideout. And then, well, things kind of go down the wrong path. And you could tell this guy's not all there. He's not mentally stable.
I enjoyed his performance. He was having fun, clearly.
Oh, he was having fun. And I thought he was fantastic in the role. And it's great to see Lawrence Fishburne show up in all these, and just like the John Wick movies, love seeing him show up in these movies, smaller movies with lower budgets. He just likes to have a good time with these roles now. He's at that age, and he's such a great actor. I think very interesting choice to be in the movie, and I think he's one of the standouts for me. But let's move on to our final thoughts. Before we get there, I got to say, I think the ending outside of the Topher Grace fiasco is not only well done, but badass. It definitely harkens back to the first Predator. We say Adrian Brody's Royce get all mudded up. Yeah, Nick, it's your favorite thing. The mud again. That's right. And I love the way when he's attacking the Predator, the way he's clubbing it. He runs around it and clubs it and then clubs it again and clubs it again. It's a very energetic and brutal way of shooting that. And I love the way that was done, the way he attempts to take out the Predator. And I think that was one of the most entertaining things for me. And I like the ending. I like that the ending ends the way that it ends. And it's not a clean ending. It's not a happy ending at all. It ends and you're like, oh shit. Oh my God. There could be a sequel to this. There could be a sequel to this. I mean, it never happened.
There could be.
It's never going to happen. And I actually highly doubt that Shane Black and Fred Decker are going to reference this movie at all in their film. But I liked it. It was very different. I liked the way it ended.
Of course, we've mentioned that Walton Goggins is in the film. And he has a monologue at some point that I just want to mention. Like, I don't have any strong feelings towards it particularly. But he says, at one point in the film, if we ever make it home, I'm going to do so much cocaine and I'm going to rape so many bitches. And I just thought that was really bizarre. And I kind of laughed, even though I'm like, am I supposed to be laughing at this? He's a disgusting character. And I know he's supposed to be.
Brian, you laughed because you're a sick fuck. You're not only a dead fuck, as we've already accomplished on the show on previous episodes, but you're a sick fuck.
I guess so. I guess.
I mean, he is. He. They said he was FBI's most wanted. So
that's true.
I mean,
that's true.
He plays a horrible piece of shit,
scuzzy guy. Yeah, scuzzy. Yeah. And he dies just as a scuzzy guy like that should. But yeah, no. I like the fact that all of the characters are so different from one another. Up until a certain point, Topher Grace is kind of like the meek, timid one with the comedic relief, and Adrian Brody is the hardened badass, and he is badass at the end when he faces off against the Predator. That is
badass.
I like him a lot.
And you had said to me while we were watching this movie, you said, whatever happened to him? And then I tagged you on Facebook yesterday on some World War II movie he's making with Bruce Willis. So that's where his career is going now. Poor guy, Oscar winner. He played Houdini, who's good in that too. I love this guy. I really do. And I think that he's a great center of the film. He's nowhere near on the level of Arnold. But
who is really?
No one is. No one is in his prime. No one touches Arnold. No other action star could ever, would ever. Maybe Charles Bronson, but we're not going to talk about him right now. Just saying, I think the film's fine. I think it's fun. I think it's entertaining. And I think it serves up the goods that Predator fans were hoping for after Alien versus Predator. So let's get down to our final thoughts and our ratings as we close out this Predator-esque B-side. Brian?
I'm going to give Predators a 7 out of 10. As I said, as you put so beautifully, Justin, this is everything a Predator fan would want in a Predator movie. And it kind of makes me hopeful, or rather curious in the future to see what's going to become of the Predator series with the Predator. These titles are so confusing.
Predator, Predator 2, Predators, the Predator.
Right. Not to be confused with Predator or Predators. I'm excited to see the Predator, to see, you know, how the different direction they take the franchise. But I thought this was a worthy attempt. I really enjoyed it. And again, there is a lot of great cinematography, great creature design with the Predator dogs. Again, I wasn't expecting that. And good cast. I don't know. This movie's got it all. And people who complain, I don't really know what you were expecting, to be honest.
No, and I'm definitely going to agree with you there. My rating will be slightly lower, though. However, it will be a 6 out of 10. We're going to switch it up between Predator 2 and Predators. I really do like this movie. I just feel like it's not on the level of what Predator 2 was in the early 90s. It needed something else to really boost itself up on the level of what people go, oh, wow, you got to see this. Word of mouth did not help this movie. The internet was a thing in 2010, people. Facebook was a thing. Twitter was a thing. And it just wasn't quite there. I still really enjoy it. I would still watch it here and there. And it's beautifully shot. And I think that the Predator stuff, the guys in the physical costumes looks great. I think the fight scenes are great. I still have some problems with it, but overall it's a 6 out of 10 for me in my book, but it's still a billion times better than those other movies that I have a feeling Brian will probably have to get to at some point on these B-sides, because we can't keep talking about decent movies or movies we love or good movies or great movies. We have to talk about the shit movies. You know, like that movie Extra that you talked about that you loved for so long that I finally got a chance to see? That movie's a piece of shit.
Oh, come on now.
I kind of liked it, though. But still, we have to talk about the worst of the worst, the best of the best. But that's it, ladies and gentlemen, for our Predator B-side. Be sure to let us know what you think of the Predator series in the comments to this post on our social media. Do you agree with us? Do you like Predators? Do you think Predator 2 is better than the original? We want to hear from you guys. And we also want to hear from you what other movies. I know our hardcore fan, Jared Taylor, and of course, Patrick Sherwood, who got us sick off Nerchies at the Mahoning Drive-In Theater for Camp Blood 4. They want to tell us what movies they want to see. They want to hear us talk about. So please let us know. But if you haven't had a chance yet, please check us out on all social media platforms at Epic Film Guys on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, you name it. And of course, you can check out all of our episodes at epicfilmguys.com. But until our main episode of the show, for myself, for Nick, who loves the first Predator, it's in his top 3 of all time. I am Epic Film Guy Justin.
And I'm Epic Film Guy Brian.
And we will see you at
the movie.